Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Action Park Media.
Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment, food as sport, food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it from. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Habib Siddiqui, founder of the Beehive of Healing Interactive Medical Center. He specializes in a multidisciplinary approach to chronic illness such as cancer and autoimmune disease with comprehensive treatment protocols that incorporate a wide range of interventions. Please enjoy our conversation.
Thank you for talking to me.
Oh, it's my privilege. Thank you for doing what you're doing.
I'm trying. I have so many ideas swirling around about the state of food and certain objectives and certain lack of objectives. But I do see people. I know many of my wife's friends see you. I think my wife has been here, her sister, and they all seem to have, they come away with a lot, but part of it is an objective with food. I certainly don't see that in the broad spectrum of America. So I just really am interested in your thoughts on that.
You know, a good place to start would be, how did you come into doing this? You know, it's, my background, I'm a family practitioner, and as I shared with you when we were setting up, I'm a medtech microbiologist, and that's what I did for a length of time before even going to medical school. Part of, I guess, if you would, the side effect of the modern world is that we have abundance. Right. And when you look at life, there is a seasonality to life. Right. You can't have oranges all the time. Right. Even if they're good for you. And but now you can walk into your Whole Foods or Erewhon or Trader Joe's or your favorite health food store. And pretty much you can have the same food, the same salad every day. Right. And that's a problem. Because the body doesn't really have the ability or the time to be able to clean out, right? It would be the same thing as the memory stick that you're using to record this conversation. There comes a time that it fills up and you got to clean it out in order to be able to receive more, data. So that's really the protocol. And when we're looking at a human body, and when continuously we were bombarded, and you know, we were told that you wake up, you know, you got to eat three times a day, and this is what you got to eat. So there was a narrative that all of us, that grew up with, right? And you know, preservatives, sugar, gluten, a lot of this stuff was part of the narrative, and we never really questioned it. Right. And now people come in and they come in with an autoimmune disease, such as it could be as subtle as thyroiditis, autoimmune thyroiditis, or Hashimoto's thyroiditis, where basically the body starts producing antibody against itself. Right. Or it could be connective tissue disease, such as scleroderma, where you start producing antibody against your skin, your joints, and so forth, or rheumatoid arthritis, right? Lining of the joints, itis, anything with an itis means inflammation. So this is where you get inflamed. You could go for a hike, you could go for a bike, you could walk up the stairs and just everything flares up, right? You could go to bed and the next morning you wake up and you can't close your hands, right? So when you look at that, and when you look at the idea of what actually has occurred for us as food, what we considered food, right? We expect food to be unadulterated, right? But when you're looking at the level of adulteration that has occurred in the food, right? You and I, we can go to Guatemala and we can see these incredible tomatoes. And we're like, wow, if we can just, you know, get that to California, take it to farmer's market, my God, we're gonna make a lot of people happy, and we're gonna make a killing just selling those tomatoes. But the problem is that in order to be able to get those tomatoes to California from Guatemala, and we have to truck it, and it's gonna take probably a couple of weeks. And by the time it gets here, it'll be bruised. No one wants a bruised tomato. So we'll go to a company and we say, gosh, is there a way that you can make the skin of these tomatoes really thick so that they don't bruise easily? They say, oh yeah, no problem. We're going to get the genetic material from salmon. We're going to mix it with the genetic material of this tomato, and we're going to come up with a genetically modified organism or genetically modified tomato. My goodness, now these tomatoes, they're juicy, they're great, their skin is very thick, and you can bus it, truck it for 4 weeks, and it's not going to get bruised. The problem is it's adulterated, because the original tomato, it might get bruised easily, but it's been around for eons, and the genetic makeup has been introduced to us, right? So my body, when I consume that tomato, it understands it. It receives it as something that that it's familiar to me. It's sort of like me right now, as I'm phonating, as I'm speaking to you, you can make sense of it. You know, the phonation goes inside, moves a tympanic membrane, you turn it into eventually an electrical stimuli, parts of the brain gives it a meaning, and then you create meaning out of this communication. If I shift, and if all of a sudden I start speaking Farsi to you, it wouldn't make much sense to you. And if I keep talking to you that way, it could irritate you, it could even make you feel angry, right? And that's what happens when we start adulterating the food. Now, on top of that, you look at some of the common foods, such as bread. Right? You get 3 amino acids and you feel like, well, gosh, if I stick these 3 amino acids in wheat, I'll get a lot more out of it. Yes, you can. But these 3 amino acids, they also change the language that the wheat speaks. That language, that linguistic abstraction, that physiological response, the body sees it as foreign, and then the body doesn't understand it, and then it'll start producing antibodies. Body against it. That's why we see a significant surge in food allergies and various different things. And when you have all these antibodies, what are antibodies? Antibodies are pieces of protein that my body has to produce. So it's very, if you would, it's an intensive process and it requires significant amount of energy, right? So as I invest and I create these antibodies, now I have less resources, less energy available for healing, for rejuvenation, for, you know, updating my growth hormone, for the environmental various toxicities and so forth that might be out there that I have to activate phase one, phase two of my liver, you know, to be able to keep clearing my body. Remember the memory stick? You got to keep cleaning it out to be able to have more data, have more space. And one of the things that's occurring as human beings, we're running out of space. We're running out of space because the foods that we're eating, it just requires so much more energy for us to be able to process it, to break it down. You know, when you speak to people, most people, they're unaware. You sit there, and I'm in the process of writing another book, and I have this thing that I do that for as long as I'm writing, I don't shave, right? I grow my beard. So when you think about it and you're like, well, where's this beard or the hair on top of my head? Where is it coming from? I mean, it doesn't just appear. It comes from something. So when you tell people that, listen, the food that you eat, let's say you pick a piece of, let's say, protein. This piece of protein, you chew it, you break it down, you swallow it. It goes down in the acidity of the stomach. You have enough hydrochloric acid and various different digestive enzymes. Eventually, you break it down into smaller pieces called polypeptide. You keep breaking it down into a tripeptide, a dipeptide. Eventually, you get it to a single amino acid. Once it's a single amino acid, it's small enough that it leaves the lining. It goes inside the interstitial fluid, and then there is a protein that picks it up, right? It's like a locomotive that you put things in it. It picks up, these proteins pick up the amino acid, and it moves it around. And it's going to take it on top of my head. This single amino acid sits there, waits for another amino acid. Now they form a bond. And then a third one, and then a fourth one. Eventually, I have a polypeptide, and eventually, I turn it into the hair on top of my head. Isn't that unbelievable?
The human body is miraculous.
I mean, you take something that is absolutely foreign from outside, right? Like a piece of protein. Whatever your the choice of your protein is, you know, quinoa, broccoli, whatever it is, a piece of steak, and then it becomes hair. It becomes facial hair. It becomes hormones. It becomes, you know, various different vitamins, right? It really behooves me when you look at, you know, when you speak to people and they're unaware that the food that they consume, it's a way that their environment is communicating to them. So if they start eating food that they're not used to, that it's been adulterated, that it shifts and changes, well, the language that food speaks inside the body, it creates chaos. And we see it in the body as autoimmunity, as connective tissue disease, as fatigue, as ADD, ADHD, you know, and we know that. We know. We've hooked little kids up to functional MRI. Functional MRI, fMRI, it's exactly what's used when we want to look at the effectiveness of an advertisement. We play the advertisement, all these participants are hooked up to the functional MRI. If the advertisement of what they're watching on TV is effective, the parts of the brain that lights up, we see it. And that is the science. Well, we got this science, and guess what? They hooked people up, these little kids, they hooked them up to functional MRI, and they give them genetically modified organism. They give them food that they're genetically modified. The parts of the brain that lit up, it's the parts of the brain that would basically allow us to diagnose them with attention deficit disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity, and so forth. Now, the traditional medical model says, well, gosh, if you got that, well we got to put you on medication, right? And we're going to put them on whether adrenaline or Concerta or, you know, a variety of it. But these are all speed. These are variations of speed. And when you put a 7-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 9-year-old on speed at that age, it has downstream effect. And, you know, by the time that they're 13, 14, 15, they're going to have more symptoms of depressions or a variety of other things. So this methodology is great. I mean, you know, if you're a follower of Milton Friedman or capitalism or trickle-down economy, that's fantastic. Because when you look at the whole industry of sickness, my gosh, it's incredible.
And it just creates more and more marketplaces.
Absolutely. One of the things, it's one of the things that's fascinating is a particular study as I roll around to see if I can actually pull out the graph to show you. And it was, it's a study out of, it was published in 2002 in New England Journal of Medicine. And what I love about this graph that was published, it's 2002, and it's Journal of New England Journal of Medicine, and the title is Inverse Relationship Between the Incidence of Prototypical Infectious Disease, Panel A, and the Incidence of Immune Disorders, Panel B, from 1950 to 2000. So what does that mean? So we got 1950 to 2000. This is the time axis. And on here, these are the incidence of infectious diseases percentage-wise, such as rheumatic fever, hepatitis A, measles, mumps, tuberculosis. We can see that this slope is sharply declining. This tells us that as we went from 1950 to 2000, the rate of these infections dropped. Many things, including, you know, vaccination, or various different, maybe even to some extent, over-treatment. Right next to it, the same timeline, 1950 to 2000, the same timeline, and we're seeing now incidence of immune disorders, percentage-wise. And we can see things such as multiple sclerosis. Multiple sclerosis is basically a piece of wire that has a plastic around it, and it, you know, and it really protects the electrical conductivity inside the wire. Multiple sclerosis is when that piece of plastic, you have patches that it's been ripped off. So the electrical activity inside our nerves, it slows down. That's what multiple sclerosis is. It affects our vision. It affects our bladder. It affects throughout the body. Crohn's disease.
That's massive.
Massive. I mean, you look around, you look at type 1 diabetes, right, which is an autoimmune disorder, mostly in adolescent, okay, kids. You look at asthma. Now, you look around and you look at the people that you love, either in your family or in the concentric circles around you, and how many of them do they have these autoimmune disorders?
I have a daughter with type 1 diabetes and another family member with rheumatoid arthritis.
Rheumatoid arthritis, and these are the things that it's right in here. Now we can see that these autoimmune diseases, the graph, it's astronomical. It's a positive graph.
I mean, it's almost a mirror exact replica of the other graph, which is in decline.
Which simply, it basically tells us that as we decrease, as we attack all these childhood diseases, and if we don't allow the children to have certain diseases that they're supposed to get, right? It's sort of like, I was 15 minutes late. Based on our agreement, if you were irritated, you could come up to me. You say, hey, Dr. S, I'm really irritated. You're 15 minutes late. And I say, gosh, Ethan, I completely take responsibility. I'm sorry. What can I do, okay, to really make it up to you so we could move forward? We have a good fight. You yell at me, and we move on, right? Yeah. That's what one of these childhood diseases is. You allow the body to work itself out. You allow the body to sit with a level of tension that builds up the relationship inside the body that we refer to it as immune system. When you take that out of the system, when you don't allow the body, the system to develop, later on in life, they get exposed to something and it goes chaos and it creates an autoimmune disease such as Crohn's disease, multiple sclerosis, type 1 diabetes, and asthma. Now, if you're in a business of selling me medication for asthma, type 1 diabetes, multiple sclerosis, and Crohn's disease, my God, this is the perfect setup.
Well, I mean, that's a great point. We have fantastic insurance and we make above average, whatever the mean in America is. I make more money than that. And even still, the cost for my daughter's type 1 diabetes is like astonishing. Like, I am shocked every month at the bills. Yes. With our incredible insurance. I don't really know how somebody pays for that if they don't have great insurance and they're not making a ton of money. I mean, it's thousands of dollars a month.
Absolutely. And when you're looking at that, when you look at it's not only the medication, it's also the quality of care. It's also the quality of food. It's also the ancillary support system that she needs to be engaged in, such as physical activity. It's also really having a mom and dad that they're grounded and contained, and they can contain the child, right? Your daughter, you know, and to make sure that she understands that, you know, that she's really whole and complete. She's just one organ is not producing a level of particular hormone, but she's going to develop and she's going to be completely normal. Most average people, most patients, they don't have access to all that. So they make poor choices, right? And especially during this time where so many people are suffering because they've lost their jobs. Some of their jobs, they might not even come back, right? And so they're struggling. So this financial challenge that they're going through, so they may not make choices. They may not be able to go to Whole Foods and come out. And just for a day or two of grocery might cost $300 to $500. They can't really afford that. So they go in and they're consuming, you know, high quality of food that they're genetically modified and they're unaware of, right? You look at the amount of corn that is cultivated in the United States, up to 90-95% of the corn genetically modified and it's subsidized, right? You look at the amount of soy. We know that at one point, World Health Organization used soy as a birth control. Right? Because it shifts and it changes the level of estrogen. We know that it has certain level of qualities that would shift and change the hormonal system. We know that places such as Israel and such as France, they have completely outlawed usage of soy in the infant formulas because they don't want to allow the infants to set up to have hormonal shifts and changes. Right now, we know and we check when their patients and are the feminine in nature that they go through, and if they have a particular malignancy such as breast cancer, we check them to see if they have various different genes that allows them to be susceptible to higher level of estrogen and so forth. And what am I bringing forward? Well, we've talked about this journey. We talked about this journey of why would a family doctor really pay attention to the quality of food or what people are consuming, or and forget the thoughts that we're having, forget what TV station we're listening to or what narrative that we're buying into that could create a level of anxiety and tension and depression that could really intertwine with poor choices that we're making. And we've talked about various different examples. We've looked at examples such as publications in one of the most scientific journals, really based on the traditional medical model of New England Journal of Medicine. And we looked at, look, their choices that we're making, the upstream choices of perhaps maybe to some extent, maybe over vaccinating or over treating our children, that the downstream effect is that it might be contributing to the rate of autoimmune diseases that for a lifetime. I mean, when you have Crohn's disease, right? When a person has Crohn's disease, they end up, if they're not on some type of immunomodulator or immune therapy, that they have to go in and get these IVs, they could end up losing their colon. They could end up living a life, okay? And so when you have multiple sclerosis, if you got multiple sclerosis and it really affects your quality of your life, there are people as young as 12, 13 year olds that they're getting multiple sclerotic symptoms, and they're being, and this was a disease that, you know, that you would see maybe in the third decade, fourth decade of life, right? That a typical person would be, they, you know, they start having some visual changes. They can't really figure it out what's occurring. They get on their treadmill and their body temperature increases, and then they'll have paralysis, or they urinate in themselves. They lose the control of their bladder. That's not what we're seeing. We're seeing younger and younger kids. There was a time that we hardly could see. Right now you look around and you see so many people with airway reactive disease, asthma, type 1 diabetes, and it's all related. So it behooves us, it really behooves us, that when a person comes in and you're evaluating them, to really, as you know, as extensively as perhaps I look at the blood work and I interpret it, you know, and usually people come in, either they're, you know, they want to focus on prevention, or they're coming in with an issue and they want a solution that perhaps is out of the box, a solution that is, you know, not to be committed to a lifetime of medications and over medications and polypharmacy, which is the usage of multiple medication that by itself creates more side effects.
Do you think there's a trade-off of, I mean, America is a very wealthy country, and if you look at impoverished countries, the instances of autoimmune disease is very low or non-existent. And do you think this is just the ebb and flow of wealth, how we have unintended consequences that occur that we then have to mitigate? And obviously, with a marketplace, we're mitigating it in a capitalistic way rather than trying to stop autoimmune, but rather just treat it and have this endless hamster wheel. But is it a fair trade-off, or is there, I guess I'm saying, for 350 million people, is there space? Is it possible to feed everybody? Because like you said, Whole Foods, it's really expensive. And then even at Whole Foods, half the stuff isn't organic and you got to like really search for it. So do you see a path where we actually conquer this, or is it just people getting knowledge and kind of fighting it out individually?
Yeah. This is a brilliant question, but it's one of those questions that's very nested, because there's a question within the question within the question. The first question is, are we looking at some unintended side effects in terms of the wealth and the abundance that we have? And I think the answer is yes. I'll give you an example. When you're looking at the quality of water, that the groundwater that's available, if you go from Florida all the way up, okay, to Maine and New Hampshire and Vermont, the quality of water changes. And here's why. In Florida, a lot of people come to Florida, perhaps even elderly, and they're usually, the average medication, in my experience when I trained in Florida, the average medication that each person was on was anywhere between 13 to 19 medications. Now, one thing you need to realize is when you go to the restroom and you flush, it doesn't just evaporate. You know, the municipal sewage line, it goes in and the sewage needs to be treated, and to some extent, some of it ends up back into the ocean. We treat it, we remove as much as we can. But you either acidify or you alkalinize the sewage in order to be able to pull out as much of the toxins, and you process it. A lot of it gets dumped into the ocean, and eventually a lot of it gets dumped and into the drinking water. If you live in Florida, given that the amount of ice that separates the topsoil from the drinking water, it's less because it's Florida, it's hot. So a lot of these chemicals are leaching into the groundwater. And, you know, when you're taking shower or various different things, you're consuming it, right? When you look at Gulf of Mexico, the amount of sewage that's being dumped into Gulf of Mexico, it's affecting, you know, the aquatic life. You look at amphibians, such as frogs, that they have a completely permeable skin. So anything in their surroundings, it gets in. They don't have a choice. So when you dumped all these sewage, gallons and thousands of gallons into the Gulf of Mexico, we can see that, you know, that the amphibians that they were born with, you know, masculine gender, they're becoming feminized. Their sex is changing, you know, because of the amount of sewage that's being dumped in, and all these hormones, all these chemicals, all that that's being dumped through the sewage into Gulf of Mexico. That's that unintended, you know, unintended consequence of abundance. You look at food sensitivity, right? If you go in and if you eat too much of a good thing daily, you're going to have food sensitivity. It's sort of like me anticipating our meeting, and I were to call you every day for past week, it would irritate you. You're like, hey, doctoress, I got it. I'll see you, you know, on Tuesday. So when you keep eating the same thing and you don't allow the body to recover, the body, in an attempt of, you know, cleansing itself, it starts producing antibody against it. And we've already discussed that the production of antibody to create food sensitivity, you got to create protein. And listen, I mean, your biceps got to be 22, 23 inches. I mean, you, if anyone knows about protein buildup, it's you. It's not easy, right? To be able to build that. It's a very time intensive process, right? So in order to do that, so if by the body producing antibodies against anything, it invests a significant amount of physiological currency to do that. And we pay a price. We pay a price by aging. Right? That's why in fasting and fasting in general, eating less caloric intake, we know that, you know, it was all the research was down the street at UCLA. We know that when you decrease the caloric intake of rats by and mouse by 33%, you increase the longevity by 33%. We know that, right? So, gosh, how many of us, we overeat, right? Because of, you know, because of emotional eating, or because we do have access to the quality of food that we have, and we have a tendency to overeat, then obesity becomes an issue. Obesity becomes an issue, and that by itself, then all of a sudden the adipose tissue in the body, it acts as a factory. It's not just sitting there. You know, adipose tissue, fat tissue, it acts as a factory, and it starts producing a higher level of estrogen in the body. In men, later on in age, in third, fourth decade and on beyond, it could create higher level of estrogen, could create, acute or chronic prostatitis, inflammation of the prostate. It could lead into benign prosthetic hypertrophy, prostate cancer. In women, it could contribute, higher level of estrogen could contribute to, you know, breast cancer, cervical cancer, uterine cancer, various different cancers, right? We know that. And that's why we check them for the various different receptors to see if they're BRCA positive, BRCA negative, if they have the genetic makeup or not. So that by itself is an unintended consequence of abundance, right? And then there is the third component that sometimes, you know, if you want to look at it from the capitalistic point of view, then somehow we've lost that sense of collaboration and consciousness and the responsibility that we have, the downstream effect, right? So if you want to just, you know, if you want to come out with a product, and if the product, you know, whatever it takes by any means necessary, you get the products done, but then, you know, what is the effect that it has on the environment? You know, that affects us. A good example would be the usage of dental amalgam, right? Mercury in teeth, in the whole, you know, industry, right? Dentistry until recently, and maybe even depending on the states, maybe even now, there is a gag order that dentists cannot recommend the active removal and replacement of dental amalgams, right? And mercury is one of the most toxic chemical on the planet, We know that. It's a neurotoxic, right? So you look at the rate of Parkinson's disease, ALS, multiple sclerosis, you know, and various different things, depressions and ADD and ADHD and insomnia.
So there's a law saying dentists can't say you should have this removed for these reasons?
They cannot. It's a gag order that dentists, depending on the states, they cannot recommend the active removal of dental amalgam. There are dentists right now that if you call them up or if you go see them and if you tell them, what are your thoughts for dental amalgam? They say, well, what's wrong with it? We've used it for years. There's no problem. You know, and we know that their teeth, that they leak mercury. And if something is known to be, to have a level of toxicity, you wouldn't want it around you at all. Not in your mouth, where you have an environment that you're continuously are grinding and chewing, and the chances of it literally leaking and affecting your body, digestive system, your nervous system, it goes up. You know, talk about unintended, consequences. You look at the percentage of sperm production, there is a sharp decline, okay, in the Western world, in the amount of sperm that men have access to. And a lot of it has to do with the environmental factor, what we're exposed to, the Wi-Fi and various different things that it affects us.
I would try to take and just make it easy for everyone. The capitalists want to make money, fine. The collectivists want to have a better life for everyone, fine. Both are fine. I want to take the morality out of it and just go, there's got to be some honesty, yeah. Right? Like, at the bare minimum, for me, I was 550 pounds. Yeah. I lost a lot of weight. I wasn't walking around eating thinking I can lose weight. It just wasn't a thought that was occurring to me. Of course, if you asked, I knew that if I ate less, I would lose weight. Of course, I knew that. But I do think there's probably some portion of the country that is also not being told enough of the truth to have this understanding, especially when you look at the rise in obesity predominantly affecting lower income,
yes,
and their access to food being what it is. It's hard to say for me, I just don't know what the solution is to say, like, well, you should just eat less. Fine. That's the easiest thing. We all know there's plenty of studies to support you get healthier if you eat less. You certainly lose weight if you eat less. Fine. But beyond that, the choice between GMO stuff and non, I just don't think that, like you say, there's a gag order on mercury in the teeth, which seems insane to me, knowing what mercury does. How do we solve this? And not even necessarily that we can, but what's the next step? Because as you say, if we want to have this idea that is for everyone, I think that it starts with education? I don't know.
Yeah. It starts with people like yourself, Ethan. It starts with you sharing your story. It starts with you really completely share. As you share your story, people, your listeners, will be touched, moved, and inspired to come out of this sense of trance. Right. And to be able to reflect, you'll be shocked and surprised how many of us, just like when we drive, like you drive from home to work every day, or when we did. And, and you wouldn't even think what path you would take. Right. It becomes almost automatic. Right. So if we were to come out of that automaticity and to be able to be reflective. We know human beings, specifically mammals, they produce hormones such as oxytocin, the happy hormone, or relaxin that makes us relax when we chew. So a lot of us, we may have had a rough day and, we sit down and we want to be able to actually chew our day, if you would. We want to be able to kind of talk about what the day was like And as we're talking about it and we're chewing, what we're doing is we're really are processing our day. That was really the intention of having dinner, that you sit around and you ask, you know, you ask, we ask our family members, our children, our beloveds, our significantness, we ask, well, how was your day? And as they're communicating, as we're communicating, we get to chew our day. And, you know, and as we're chewing our food, and then you go to sleep, and then when we go to sleep, specifically going into deeper level of sleep that's referred to as rapid eye movement part of the sleep, and the amount of growth hormone and various different hormones that gets to produce that level, we get to clean up. Remember the memory stick, that it needs to be cleaned out, okay, so you can receive more data. That was the purpose of dinner. That was the purpose of going into a deeper level of sleep. That was the purpose of updating our hormonal system, our neurotransmitters, so that we would be ready for tomorrow and tomorrow. Now, unfortunately, we've lost that. Now we have a tendency, we sit down, we want to have dinner, we're eating, you know, chickens that they're completely, you know, right now you look at, you know, a chicken, and just the amount of hormone that's used to basically get the chicken to the market faster, meatier, and they can make more money. Right now, well, gosh, if you give, we know that if you give anything steroids, yes, they get big, but you pay a price, and the price is that you sabotage their immune system, so they get sick. And when they get sick, we put them on antibiotics. There was that one of the most traditional journals is the Journals of Chest, CHEST, which is the journal for the American Pulmonology Associations. And this goes back to early 90s, 93 maybe. And they published a study that, is it true that chicken soup is good for you? So they looked at chicken soup from UK, from Spain, from China, and from United States. And it was fascinating. The most therapeutic chicken soup was chicken soup from Spain. And the least therapeutic chicken soup was chicken soup from China. So they went in, and when I say therapeutic, the way that they would do it is they would make chicken soup, they would get the broth, and you would get a petri dish with agar, which is the medium in it that the bacteria grows on. And then you culture the bacteria grows, and then you get a little bit of the chicken soup, and you put it on the agar, and you see if it would kill the bacteria, and then the zone of clearing, like how much bacteria would it clear. So the chicken soup that would kill the bacteria and had the largest clear zone, it killed the most bacteria, and you knew that that chicken soup was the most therapeutic and the strongest. So they wanted to investigate, but why is it that Spain has the most therapeutic chicken soup? And what they found was that at the time of this study, Spain, they were actually feeding their chickens a third generation antibiotics, right? So that as you were eating your chicken soup, you were also taking ciprofloxacin, Cipro, which is one of the most powerful and strongest antibiotics. And that's why the chicken soup was therapeutic. And in China, they didn't have the resources, so the chickens weren't getting ciprofloxacin, and it wouldn't pass on into their broth, into the chicken soup. What was fascinating, and this is talking about the unintended consequences, and this is when, you know, it initially seems like a good idea, and you rush to do it, and without thinking, what's the downstream effect, right? What comes beyond that? And they found out that in Spain, they also at the time had the highest rate of what was referred to as MRSA, or methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, superbugs, really, which makes sense. Flesh-eating bug. So now it makes sense. If you overdo it on antibiotics application, the bacteria, after a while, they get resistant to the antibiotics. And that's talk about unintended consequences that is lethal. Because if you go down the street at Cedars, if you go to UCLA, if you go to USC, if you go go to any major academic hospital setting, you go to their NICU, neonatal intensive care unit, you'll see little babies that they're there with something as simple as ear infections that, you know, at some point we could give them just amoxicillin or just the basic penicillin antibiotics. But these, you know, Pseudomonas aeruginosa, which is one of the most common microorganisms, bacteria that could create otitis media or ear infection. There was a time you give just a dose of antibiotics, you would wipe it out. Right now, we have Pseudomonas aeruginosa that they're superbugs. They're resistant to antibiotics that can kill little babies. And that's what's occurring. Talk about unintended consequences.
And this is just because these substances are now so prevalent in the groundwater and in the livestock that we eat and the vegetables. And
you know, little Johnny's mom or dad will take little Johnny in. It says little Johnny is pulling on his ear. And the pediatrician looks inside little Johnny's ears and says, well, gosh, it's a little red. It could be most likely viral. But, you know, the mom, that she might not be satisfied, or the dad, with that decision, so that they're persistent. And we drove and we're here and we're paying for it. So
we got to get a Z-Pak.
We got to walk away with the Z-Pak. We got to walk away with the, you know, Cipro. We got to walk away with an antibiotics. And this is an overprescription problem without really looking at and considering and thinking about the downstream effect of creating superbug such as Pseudomonas aeruginosa, that right now it's completely resistant to every single known antibiotics that we have. We're running out of antibiotics.
I have friends who, no matter where they go, if they go somewhere for a weekend, they always have a Z-Pak in their toiletries. And I never had a good argument. I always thought, this is crazy. What, you're just going to wake up and take a Z-Pak without getting tested? You have a headache or something, you take a Z-Pak? It seemed crazy to me, but this is a great argument that I can make now to say, like, you really shouldn't take that.
Yes, absolutely. And that's an amazing point that you're bringing forward. You see, which is really related to, you know, Dr. Siddiqui, this is great points that you're bringing forward, but what's the solution? You know, how could we touch, move, and inspire our listeners to be able to be part of that conversation, which is solution oriented? So it really brings us back. See, a person that has a gun with them and carries a gun with them all the time. And I'm here to tell you that that person, unless this is what they do for a living, or, you know, there's a peace officer, police officer, part of security, to carry a loaded gun with you everywhere you go, that means that you have certain level of anxiety and fear and that you haven't really worked out, right? And you'll be very Glock happy to pull out your gun and so forth. So we've treated antibiotics the same way. Instead of really dealing with our own deep sense of anxiety and perhaps a lack of trust to life, we've replaced it with a Z-Pak in our toiletry. So when we go somewhere, when we go camping, or we're going to go to a different country and so forth, or even here traveling inside United States, we only feel safe if we take our blankie with us, if we take our what we're comfortable with. And in this case, in the modern world, it's the Z-Pak.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra.
and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
It's really the same concept as carrying a gun because I want to feel safe, or getting a larger car because I don't feel safe in a smaller car, you know. And it's like, let's really learn to think through some of the decisions. So one aspect would be, definitely I agree with you, I think it's brilliant, education is very important. It's really to, you know, to bring forward the aspect of emotional eating, the aspect of intermittent fasting, the aspect of, you know, eat less, but quality of food that you eat matters. You know, to start having communications in terms of the importance of the quality of food, you know, and maybe even cultivating a variety of farmers market or different things that we could eat. You know, teaching at a very young age, maybe even as early as high school, like teaching our children, our future, how to cook, how to eat. You know, that when you're looking at that, you know, in nature, nothing is purple. So if you're seeing an M&M, it's purple. That's the coloring, you know?
I mean, that's a great point too, because I remember seeing a food pyramid in school, but I never remember having somebody tell me what protein did or what carbohydrates did or what the purpose of fat was and how necessary it is. And there was a big, I eat low fat now, but I still get some fat, but I remember there being a big low fat push when I was a kid. That was kind of the beginning of that, I think. And so it was just fat is bad. We're going to increase the sugar by a lot and decrease the and salt and decrease the fat, and everybody gained weight. And so I think this is a great point, because I didn't know what any of that stuff did until I was an adult and I actually had to go read about it. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. That's why they say knowledge is power. That's why you're being touched and you drove and you're here at Beehive of Healing, and you're investing your life to be able to hold this conversation, to capture it, and, you know, and to pay it forward to your listeners, so that as they listen, you know, they can start doing their own investigation and they can start being more reflective, so that the future that awaits us is, it has a different flavor. That's what this conversation is. You know, the fact, the suffering that you went through to be able to release the weight that you were carrying, right? Because you realize that, wait, that this doesn't make sense for me to carry this backpack. And, you know, later on as I age, I'm going to have hip problem and knee problem. And the traditional medical model and the current cultural narrative is, don't worry about it. You get your hip replaced, you get your knee replaced. But these are not healthy. Because all of these, they require a certain level of, they got to put you under, which means the amount of anesthetics and various things that you get, it's going to just clogged up the liver. Liver is the recycler of the body. You know, when you look at traditional medical models such as Ayurvedic medicine, the medicine of India, traditional Oriental medicine, the medicine that's practiced in Korea, Japan, in China, when the systematic model of medicine, everything is related, and liver plays an important role, and the detoxification that occurs in the liver is sort of like the recycler. you know, and it has two phases, phase one, phase two, that it helps us to clean out. And so everything goes through the liver, the food that we eat, the hormones that we produce, the medications that we, you know, and what it does, because most of these things that we consume, they're not water soluble. So one of the, amongst many functions of the liver is to produce a detergent. Like you want to go wash your hands, you use soap. And if your hands is oily, the soap makes it water soluble, so the oil comes off. Bile, B-I-L-E, is that chemical that's produced in the liver, and it's stored in the gallbladder that makes something conjugated. It makes it, if it's water insoluble, it makes it water soluble so that we could urinate it, we could defecate it out of the body. So in order to be able to do that, but you know, when you go through hip replacement, knee replacement, when you have multiple cosmetic surgery, elective surgery, it just clogs up your liver to the point that it pushes you, you age faster. It just doesn't make sense that, you know, you look at kids, and because the narrative is that you got to look certain way in order to get the level of attention from the opposite sex or so forth. Now they go in and they, you know, overeat and they overwork. And by the time that they're in their late 20s or early 30s, they're coming in and they have degenerative joint disease in their shoulders, in their knees. And they kind of need all these surgeries. By the times that they're in their mid to late 40s, their body are really just starting to break down. And that's when you start seeing all these incidents of autoimmune diseases occurring.
Yeah. And to your point about saying, don't worry about it, there is, especially with when you're talking about weight right now, a huge movement saying we're not allowed to say anything about weight. I have no problem with somebody being overweight if they're very happy and they don't want to change it. I don't care. But I've found in talking to people, it's more truthful or more usual that somebody who is overweight wants to lose weight and has had failures and has either given up or is, you know, white knuckling their way to starting again and doesn't have confidence in it and doesn't have a real viable solution. And so, but even still, it's not, you're not allowed to talk about it in a way of like, everybody should lose some weight. Like, I think everyone in America could probably lose a little bit of weight and it wouldn't hurt them. But it is a difficult thing right now to discuss. And we have to make it okay, you know, to discuss it. And not to say everybody has to or they don't have to. Hell, if you like having asthma, have asthma. I don't care, you know. But I think most people probably don't like having asthma.
Yeah, I appreciate the conversation and the intention behind the conversation, which is, when we look at across our culture currently, there's a certain level of hypersensitivities. Not only there is an increase in food sensitivities, things that we're sensitive to, right? But there is also a level of cultural sensitivity that it's occurring. And what's attached to that is a level of mind shaming, right? And so that creates fragmentation, that creates a fracture within society. What you want is, and perhaps the healthy society, what it would look like, or the ideal scene of a healthy society, is that of a society that there is a dialogue, that instead of saying you can't say that, you can't do this, that there is a dialogue where people get to speak what's occurring for them. And, you know, and there is a quality of cultural listening. See, culture also has listening. If, you know, if we can create the level of cultural listening so that people are able to speak from a place of freedom, then there is a dialogue. There is a dialectical culture, and a dialectical tongue, a culture that is tolerant of being able not only having tolerance for the opposite point of view, but they have reverence for the opposite point of view. And then the side effect of that culture is growth, is learning, is healing, right? A culture that does that has minimal level of tolerance and absolutely no reverence is a culture that you'll see an increased rate of autoimmunity. You see an increased rate of thyroid issues where people, you know, thyroid is where the throat is. They start having issues with not being able to speaking their truth, right? And when you get a culture that you push them, you corner them, well, now all of the things that they want to say that they can't, they don't feel safe of saying, they either say it in social media and you create a culture that is virtual, that is not real, right? Or you turn it into malignancies such as racism, malignancies such as holding judgment against yourself and other people that they don't look like you do, right? And these are all side effects of having a culture that doesn't have a cultural listening that could cultivate, that could grow literally healing and health, because it's tied into consciousness.
Yeah. I think that is so beautiful and kind of the fundamental that I'm looking for, you know? Mm-hmm. That's just it. The consciousness.
Absolutely. And it was the consciousness. And that's what you very eloquently said, that, hey, Dr. S, there was a time that I was 500 pounds and I just didn't know any better. But, you know,
It's a very tricky headspace to put myself back into, because it's been a while since I was that big. And I think at the time, if you had had me sit down and do a test on how a person loses weight, I could have done it and explained that if a person eats less than they expel in energy, they're going to that balance, they can lose weight. I think I knew that, but I didn't understand any of the nuance. I didn't have it as a goal every day that I was waking up to. I certainly had some failures along the way, but really, if I'm being completely honest, there was other stuff that I was dealing with that I had to confront before I was even able to confront that. And I don't think it would have worked otherwise.
It doesn't work. That one of the pillars that I work with, based on the form of medicine that I practice, which we refer to it as entelechy medicine. And entelechy is the movement of the acorn becoming an oak tree. See, the acorn gets planted and goes through the dark night of the soul, and then it breaks open and it becomes an oak tree, right? Every human being, we're born here and we go through certain dark nights of the soul and challenges in order to break open and eventually become the oak tree that we're here to be, right? Which is the evolution of our consciousness. So based on that medical model, consciousness precedes phenotypic expression, meaning consciousness, what we hold, the collection of our thoughts, feelings, emotions, and everything else, that consciousness precedes, comes before the weight that we put on, the pain that we have. If you don't handle at the level of consciousness, if you don't have a good spiritual practice, and by spiritual practice, it has nothing to do with religion. Sometimes religion can and should be the spiritual practice, but it doesn't necessarily have to be, right? If a person does not have a specific spiritual practice, then they struggle. Then they won't be able to really work with the misunderstandings that we all pick up along the way, along the journey of going from an oak tree, from an acorn becoming an oak tree, the misinterpretations. I'm bad. I'm not good enough. You know, I can't do that. I'm not smart enough. I'm not thin enough. I'm not thick enough. I'm not tall enough. These are the misinterpretations and misuses of energy that we pick up. And we sometimes forget that this realm, that this school that we call life, it's really here for us to come in and to fuck up. Yeah. and to make mistakes, and to actually, you know, understand it, and to go through compassionate self-forgiveness, and to learn from it, and to be able to move forward. You know, I'll never forget, I was speaking to my 13-year-old, and you know, and recently we've started making compost for our farm, and we had to get some dairy cow manure, right? And we got to pay for it. And I said, you see, someone else's feces shit, you know, cow shit, we pay for it because it becomes compost. It becomes, you know, helpful. And we need to really understand that. We need to really understand that instead of shoving our failures, our manures deep inside and hide them, that could contribute to a culture of sickness, that we accept it, we bring it outside, and we get to cultivate it and turn it into compost, and really to create the future fertile ground for all of us.
I think that might be my favorite analogy I've ever heard of turning our, you know, cow shit into something really valuable.
That's why we're here. I truly believe that. And when you look at every single religion and most religious practices, they really have that. You know, for me, understanding this essence of compassionate self-forgiveness, it's in the center of it. And you know, as we grow up, the educational model is such that it doesn't really develop our emotional IQ. It really cultivates, and it moves towards the cultivation, the growing of the intellectual IQ, you know. But, you know, intellectual IQ, you know, I went to medical school, and I remember at the time the medical school model was every week you had to, you have to memorize a phone book. You take a test, and then, you know, you had to forget, you go out, you have some beers, and to clear up your database, the memory, so that you will be ready for the next, you know, next week memorization. But what we're talking about, it's more of an insight. It's to be able to have the mental space and to really reflect and to think through. And it has nothing to do with an educational model. I mean, you don't need to have a PhD, you don't need to have a master's, or you don't necessarily need to have gone through college in order to be able to be reflective and to start connecting the dot and, you know, and seeing, well, is this making sense? You know, gosh, maybe I should do some fasting. And doesn't mean that you got to do it for 40 days like Jesus did. What you could do is your last meal could be at 6 p.m., right? The last meal, 6 p.m., and then, you know, and then you don't eat anything until the following 6 or 8 or, you know, 10 p.m. or whatever you want, at 10 a.m., whatever you want. And this gives you enough of, you know, 10 to 12 to 14 hours in between. And when you go to sleep, your stomach is not filled up. Your liver is not preoccupied. The gallbladder doesn't have to be overworked. Your kidneys, they don't have to continuously clear. The heart, you don't put that much pressure on the heart to really pump up the, you know, the volumes of blood into different organs. So you really allow your body to be in a deeper level of sleep. And when you go into a deeper level of sleep, you produce, you know, the REM sleep produces significant amount of growth hormone and various different neurotransmitters and so forth. And it helps us with rejuvenation, with repair. So the next day when we wake up, we feel like, wow, I really feel rested. And then we're ready. And when we're rested and when we're ready, and if you're sitting in the car, or if someone, whether your loved ones or someone that you don't know, if they have a shortcomings, the chances of you losing your cool and attacking them would minimize. Now, all of a sudden, now you're getting into a culture that is revolving around love, the consciousness, and the cultural consciousness for love rather than fear, rather than an attack. Only a culture that is it's autoimmunity. It's a grassroots movement. It comes from the culture and it oozes into individual cells, individual human beings. And the medical model only stops at treating the body. And we don't really treat looking at the spirit and the disconnection from the spirit, the disconnection from the soul, which for me, based based on the form of medicine that I practice in telekinesis, is really the starting point, paying attention to a person's spirit, spiritual practices, and the ecosystem that is there, the terrain, the ecosystem that is there. And that that spiritual ecosystem is incredibly important.
I think it can be applied to any aspect, but I certainly think that for what I'm looking at right now, which is mostly obesity, because that's what I dealt with.
Sure.
I think there's a lot of that fog, that automation where we're just moving through life that is occurring. It certainly was my experience without the reflection. And I don't know what the cause of it is for everyone. If the reflection is painful and it's got to be done gradiently or what, but it's necessary.
You're absolutely right. There is, the research has been done, and we have studies and internationally that, you know, people that they have various different traumas during childhood, they have a propensity to gain, you know, a higher percentages of body weight, right? And that points to many things. People, both sexes, men and women, that if they have traumas, even micro traumas, it could really have they cultivate a propensity for obesity, right? So a culture that pays attention to that, a culture that really bases the educational system beyond physical education, beyond educating us on, you know, the food pyramid, the various different colors, not eating mostly out of a package. When you look at New Jersey, you know, the top 13 industries in New Jersey, these are the food flavoring industries. These are the industries that they create the Cheetos, and the Cheetos, they add so much flavor to it that it activates the parts of the brain that would get activated if people were smoking crack.
Yeah.
I mean, we're giving little babies, little kids, we're giving them packs of, you know, Cheetos and different things that they're chemically, strategically induces the parts of the brain that it creates addiction. And we're wondering why they have one Cheeto and unless they finish at least one bag, they won't stop. And then you look inside their mouth and the Cheetos and the spices and the chemicals, it creates such an erosion that their entire gum line, it erodes because of this. So, you know, someone needs to pay attention to that, because within the capitalistic outlook, then it's like it's a smart product, you know, trickle down economy. But then we're looking at the responsibility towards the culture, responsibility toward, is this really for the highest good of society?
Yeah, and we get into a situation too where, like a bad auto repair shop, we're more financially secure if we add a problem as we fix a problem to keep the business going.
That's right. Then now what we're creating is it's a trickle down model, right? Then now we're seeing with the graph that we started looking at from the New England Journal of Medicine, where from 1950s to 2000, we saw that there is a direct correlation between incidence of infectious diseases. And as we decreased the infectious diseases during childhood, we saw that there is an astronomical increase in an autoimmune diseases that people need to take medications daily in order to stay alive. And, you know, and as you have a personal experience with your sweet daughter, that even given your level of affluence and support with your health insurance, you notice that it's like, my God, that's a significant amount of resources. And how are other people that they don't have access to what I have access to can survive this? That is, you know, and the minute that, you know, if she's not cared for, then, you know, all of a sudden you're going to, God forbid, deflect that, a patient can easily go into coma, right, and death. Yeah. And if they're not cared for, this could easily create end-stage organ disease where their eyes get affected, their kidneys get affected. They end up needing dialysis because they cannot produce and filter their blood and produce urine. So now they need to go in every other day and they need to sit there for anywhere between 3 to 6 hours for their blood to be filtered through a machine and urine and to be separated so that they're staying alive. And they need to do that for the rest of their lives. It is very scary. And as a parent, you know, and that's really at the same time, you're sublimating that fear, you're sublimating your journey, the suffering that you've gone through, even as a human being, personally releasing the weight. And that's really what this conversation, this podcast is about, that what you're putting out there is really a way of giving back and starting a larger conversation for all of us. Conversation of how to be very solution oriented, how to be kinder, how to be more gentler and loving towards ourselves and people around us.
Dr. S, thank you so much. I think this is really a beautiful contribution to what I'm doing, and I appreciate it.
It's my privilege. Thank you for asking, and thank you for this opportunity and allowing me in a from place of humility to be a part of it. And I'm very proud of you.
Yeah, thank you.
And now for the Q&A.
Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Would like to know. Quick question, he says. How do you compensate workouts when you have a chronic bad body part? I've got a shoulder that is in the it'll have to be replaced one day category. Ooh. Makes bench and most chest work painful with weights. Do you think you can effectively use weights to train the rest of the body and just have chest trained with body weight?
So like, I guess he's saying push-ups he can do.
Yeah. I mean, and it could be, you know, he's just saying basically a chronic bad body part.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, but let's take his example. He's got a shoulder.
So. But so I guess in this situation, he can do something because I think the shoulder is partially engaged in a push-up. Mm-hmm. But if he's saying he can do body weight, I mean, this is tricky, dude. I don't think you should hurt yourself, but yeah, I wouldn't let a shoulder injury keep me from working out at all. I would certainly avoid compounding that shoulder injury, and I would talk to somebody about ways to strengthen possibly muscles around it. But that I think you would need to see like a physical therapist. Listen. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about here, to be honest with you. I'm not trained in any of this stuff. I'm not a nutritionist or a dietitian or a physiotherapist or anything. I don't know. If you have a problem, you should see somebody who knows about these problems. I'm telling you, if I tweaked, and I have a number of times, tweaked my tricep, I'm not working that out for a while. But I've never been at risk of having to have it replaced. So that becomes a different story. But if I had to have shoulder surgery, I'm still going to do legs. I'm still going to do stuff with my core. I'd probably wind up doing a bit more cardio, honestly. I feel better when I exercise, so I wouldn't let something like that keep me out of the gym. It would be super tough with a leg injury because then you risk not being able to even get like walking done. I don't know. I wouldn't let a shoulder keep me from working out. But again, don't damage yourself.
Yeah, definitely check with somebody.
Yeah, I think legally we have to say like please, you know, don't hurt yourself.
Yeah,
that's all. And I think that's true too. Like if you've got an injury, especially something that's going to require surgery, don't do anything that's going to make it worse.
Mm-hmm.
But do what you can otherwise. Is that bad? Did I just get sued?
No, you said do what you can otherwise. I think it's pretty clear. You said don't hurt yourself. That's okay, like good. Underlined bold red.
Yeah, that's underlined bold red. You can't see it, but she's got a marker.
That's right.
Thank you for the question. If you have a question you would like me to answer on this show, please submit it to AmericanGlutton.net.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton.
I'm Ethan Suplee, and as always, joined by my chaperone, Paige Dorian. Follow us on Instagram at American Glutton Podcast. Sincerely.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.